Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Yeah, that all sounds about right. And after my brief stint as one of the most foremost sideline Los Angeles Sparks fans, we have now taken our talents to South Bend, as you can see on the ESPN Plus side of things here. It's Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales hanging out today. Janae Agwumike has more of her obligations to those Los Angeles Sparks here. And so, Trevor, kind enough to come spend some time with us again. You guys have heard him around this show. You also see him co-hosting Sports Nation each and every day here on ESPN Plus as well. And Trevor is feeling particularly fine because we are going to talk about the unique brand of pain that resides in Philadelphia right now, what the future looks like for one player very well associated with, even though he's not technically a part of the process, and what's gone down with the NCAA and the Supreme Court. But Trevor Scales is also all things Atlanta and has to be feeling particularly good this evening, aren't you, Trev?
You're daggone right, Mike Golic Jr. We've talked several times about our tattoos and how sometimes we are ashamed of them. This State Farm Arena tattoo that I got on my bicep? No, I'm proud as all outdoors in this mug today. Look, I don't get many chances to relish in the idea of that tattoo often at all because, look, we all know, like you mentioned, the pain that Atlanta franchises go through. But today, Mike Golic Jr., your boy is proud as all outdoors to have that tattoo on his arm.
It is incredible. Trevor, for as long as I've known you, it took me a while to get to this tattoo as a reality on your body here. But man, the timing couldn't be better of its public popularity and this team because Trae Young and this Atlanta Hawks squad, Nate McMillan and company here, are shining right now as they advance in winning Game 7 to head on to the Eastern Conference Finals. Now they're going to get to square off with the Milwaukee Bucks, who also won in a big-time Game 7. And Trev, before we get to, because the sound around Ben Simmons coming off of this game has been terrifying, quite frankly. I hope that young man is staying far, far away from a phone and the internet and everything in between today based off what not only people in the public are understandably saying about him, but also what people in his own team, like it be your own people sometime, is the movement right now in Philadelphia. But for Atlanta, Trev, just overall feeling around the city, around the people that you know down there right now, watching what was a run that started in the first. A lot of people looked at it and said, all right, we're building something here. It seems like a foundation to now a legitimate shot at it all, one of the last four teams standing.
Pure excitement, dog. Like, that's just point blank period what it boils down to at this point, because it was a lack of expectations not only placed upon this team because of the city that they reside in, but also because of the injuries that hampered them as we entered into the postseason. No Cam Reddish towards the tail end of the season. And then DeAndre Hunter goes down in round one, and that was a guy who had provided a level of defense and three ball capability that really had you excited about the youth of this team. Like, they are the they are 26 and a half about average age according to this roster, and so that is the sixth youngest team to make it to a conference final. So knowing that, having that as a backdrop for the excitement, having the context surrounding the city of Atlanta as a backdrop, and then taking out the teams that they have thus far, New York City, who was loud as all outdoors about their pride in their franchise, then you take out Philly, who was boisterous in their knowing of they were going to beat this Atlanta Hawks team. This is just like excitement on 100 with zero expectations. It's the most beautiful formula to be happy about a team.
It is incredible. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, because you're right, it's felt like it's been playing with house money for a while, and all the expectations we said were on the other side, and now what comes along with it is we search for someone to blame. And Trev, I can think of few instances where the someone to blame has been so painfully obvious for everyone in this spot. Ben Simmons is drawing the vast majority of the Philadelphia-related ire today. And Ben Simmons has always been an interesting case study, right? The national media has looked at him and said one thing. Philadelphia defenders have usually found a way to point out all the things defensively, what he does assist-wise, like he did last night, does well. And last night ended up being the perfect Ben Simmons 2021 case study, where yes, defensively he helped bother Trae Young. Yes, offensively, he dished out 10-plus assists, but we have the most damning numbers in here that have come up time and time again. Tom Haberstroh pointed this out on Twitter. Ben Simmons' fourth quarter stats in this series. He attempted in game one, went 2 for 2 on field goals in the fourth quarter. Game two, 0 for 0. Game three, 1 for 1. Game four, 5, 6, and 7. 0 shots, 0 makes from the field. And it prompted Doc Rivers, the 76ers head coach, to get asked after the game, can Ben Simmons be the point guard on a championship team? As here's what he'd had to say. That's incredible. Trevor, to hear that from the head coach immediately after the game in the same press availability where Joel Embiid came out and said he thought the turning point of the game was where Ben Simmons in the fourth quarter passed up a wide open dunk after being challenged by Trae Young, only to see the ball end up in Tobias Harris's hands with a missed here. Are you shocked at just how open this team has been with their criticism of one player?
Yeah, it's striking. It is alarming in a lot of different senses. And as you mentioned before about Ben Simmons, it was like you can avoid, you know, the press talking about you. You can avoid the news outlets kind of getting on your case and everything like that. But when it's your own people, as you so eloquently put, that is the most frustrating thing that you cannot avoid. And it stares you in the face every single time. Not to mention, Joel Embiid even asked about the bucket that he passed up, the sure bucket that he had underneath the rim. And even Joel has to just, he lays on the sword in the sense of saying, like, nah, that was on my guy. I don't really have an explanation as far as why he didn't take that shot. So that is just what's so striking when you look at a sport, and sports in general, where it's usually kept close to the vest if you're going to blame somebody within that locker room. But nah, they loud and proud with it right about now, and that's terrifying at the when it comes to the standpoint of where Ben Simmons is going to play his next minutes in the NBA.
And I think it's just that, Trev, that we kind of have to sit on now, because do I think all this was a good look from Doc Rivers and Joel Embiid? No, because usually it is the code that you're going to criticize the team in public or criticize yourself in public and then praise the team in public and leave the rest of that for behind closed doors. This indicates a level of frustration that has to exist for you to go so far against that, because Doc Rivers is certainly not without blame in this entire process. I will say I sort of laughed at the people who wanted to bring up Joel Embiid's 8 turnovers in this game, as if it was reason number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 why they lost this series. Like, Joel Embiid is not going to be slandered on this show, because what he did in this series, what he provided that team in this series, was above and beyond what we could expect from him physically. But, Trev, all of this does lead to the point. Do we think this is the last time we'll see Ben Simmons in a Sixers uniform? He's got 4 years and over $100 million left on that contract, so there's a lot of reasons why this is complicated. But do you think he can realistically suit up for this team in 2022?
That's exactly what I was going to point to. Like, that contract is very unappealing for a brother that didn't take but 3 shots over the course of the entire series in the fourth quarter, right? Like, that's where it becomes so alarming, where you may want to move on, but in order for you to move on, somebody has to want to take on that project. And I don't know what is appealing about the Ben Simmons game right about now, but there is something that provides you a little bit of hope, at least from Ben Simmons' standpoint, where he owned up to it post-game, saying like he has to be better. And I used the word arrogance last time I was on with you about his game and how he refuses to sort of expand what he does. It's a bit more of a stubbornness. I may have mischaracterized it. And so maybe that stubbornness retracts a little bit. Maybe it comes back to the point where he sees that there is a necessity for him to expand what he can do specifically on the offensive end of the floor, and maybe that allows for room for hope for other franchises to step in and say, you know what, we'll take on their reclamation project. And maybe it allows Philly to be able to move on from something that has clearly gone sour, at least within its own organization.
Yeah, a change of scenery might help everyone involved in this instance, because I think there's a legit combo we can have about what is Ben Simmons. What are you going to get from now on when you get Ben Simmons? Because I think there's still a lot there, but this is a series where the 6 inches in between his ears were clearly broken by the end, and that needs fixing before anything else. We will get to more on that, but coming up next, something else that has always needed fixing. The NCAA found an opponent that sent a resounding message to it and everybody else around the world of college athletics. We'll tell you what that was next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
You've seen the cracks starting to form for a while now in the foundation of amateurism. The NCAA constantly having to go to war with state politicians, trying to push back at people in the media criticizing them. Hell, even the players in the NCAA's member institutions took aim at them during this spring. Now it's all getting really, really interesting. Chene and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales hanging out with us, filling in for Chene Agwumike today. And Trevor, you and I spend a lot of time covering college football, both on our digital properties here at ESPN and beyond that. And the one thing we've kind of seen over the last few years, and tell me if I have been wrong about this, because I'm curious for your perspective. It's felt like, by and large, when we've talked about things like name, image, and likeness, when we've talked about things like pay for play, even going down that road, there have been more and more people who have been looking at this going, well, yeah, no, of course college athletes should be getting more than what they're getting now. Like, look at all the rest of this built around it. Have you been surprised, as I am, at the number of people that have now started to find themselves voicing support for players in college sports?
Excluding the idea of the echo chamber that we all live in, that is our own Twitter timeline, I think, yes, I have been pleasantly surprised by the idea that most folks are in line with the idea of this just makes sense because of the amount of revenue that we see streaming into college football at large. Because of what we see each of these players put their bodies through and wind up on the wrong side of injury paths. Like, that is what makes this case so airtight, it feels like, for why exactly they should be able to just, at bare minimum, make money off the idea of their identity being used by these institutions time and time again to get in more and more money. So, yeah, I have been surprised by the amount, but it just, again, it just makes so much sense that it was beyond the idea of it being long overdue. Like, we're here, and it should have been here to begin with.
It should have been here to begin with. And you're right. It is all felt long overdue from some of the obvious parts, like the things that have become so glaring. But today, we had nine people that became allies of this cause that I was not really ready to see enter the fight in the way that they did. But the U.S. Supreme Court ruled against the NCAA today in a case involving the NCAA and antitrust law in here, which sounds like a lot of mumbo jumbo on the surface, but hear me out on this. The NCAA got overruled 9-0 by the Supreme Court when it came to a case saying the NCAA was violating antitrust placing limits on the education-related benefits that schools can provide to athletes. This decision is going to allow schools to provide athletes with unlimited compensation as long as it's some way connected to their education. Now, Trevor, on the surface, that doesn't sound like it's going to majorly overhaul anything around college sports, this idea that, all right, you can give kids free laptops now for class, you can give kids, you know, free access to other things related to books, related to academics that help out this cause, which I'm sure some schools will get creative with and find ways to do, you know, close to the thing that people don't want them to do in paying players. But where it got interesting, Trev, was the language that we heard from the Supreme Court on this, right? Like, you had guys like the Supreme Court Justice Kavanaugh out here basically taking aim at the entire idea of the student athlete that the NCAA is trying to put out here and basically saying this isn't going to hold up much longer in a way that might spell problems for the NCAA, not right now, but in the very near future.
Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh taking aim at the NCAA and their monopolizing tactics is not something I had on my offseason bingo board. I'm not going to lie to you, right? It was something that took me off guard without question. So that beginning with the concept of sort of deconstructing, again, this monopoly that college football, that the NCAA has on college football, and them destructing the idea that they can bring in so much money without disseminating it to, as they put it, their workers, right? Like, they were very clear in the language, as you mentioned. They called them workers. They fell short of using the word employee, which I also think was a very intentional move, but calling them workers and saying that they are directly responsible for the amount of money streaming into this institution means a lot. And again, it opens the door for other lawsuits to follow that will likely result in the same sort of endings. Like, that is a pathway that has now been opened for this all to kind of be deconstructed bit by bit.
If you're looking around as the NCAA, Chene Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales, and you're saying, wait a minute, we unified bipartisan politics. Like, we unified a Supreme Court that has so many varying degrees of things that they are even willing to come close to agreeing on unanimously against us. Man, it's got to be painfully obvious that what you're doing is just starting to not make a lot of sense, Trevin. As we look at this, the interesting thing is going to become, all right, where does this go from here right now the next time the NCAA gets challenged on something like what they do with their players, limiting the free market around college sports. Because this is all just a reminder that where we're going, the direction we're going, is not going to stop here, right? Like that seems to be what I keep coming back to, is this feels just like the beginning of something else. But for the NCAA to fight this all the way up to the Supreme Court, again, fight that they could put an arbitrary cap on what players can get from their scholarship and have that struck down in front of everybody in this way, lets me know that, all right, this landscape seems to be skewing incredibly pro-player, and the fact that more and more people keep lining up for that, hell, even politicians who see an easy win in the idea that they can go out here, support players, and support schools' ability to basically go and recruit using more means now, even more means than they had before, all seems to point in the direction and the tidal wave of change that's coming to these sports.
It's interesting to think about where this line is going to stop moving too, right? Like, because we've seen down in the state of Georgia where, yes, you can capitalize off of your name, image, and likeness, but certain institutions will then take that, take 75% of said revenue or whatever you generate, put it in a pot, and only disseminate a certain amount to you upon graduation. So we have a sort of linchpin pulled where we have that access to get money to the responsible parties and get benefits to the responsible parties. But where they end up drawing this line again, and it may end up being arbitrary once again, but at least the idea of amateurism is falling, right? Like that whole shamateurism word that we like to throw out there because of just how faulty the idea of it really is, that's starting to crumble bit by bit. And as you continue to, again, establish where this line is going to be, I'm fascinated to see where it ends up falling.
Yeah, Nicole Arbach from The Athletic, who does a great job covering college football for them as a writer, is going to stop by for a little on us and kind of tell us, all right, what does today actually mean practically? Because, again, players aren't going to start being paid for their play at this point in time. Players aren't going to see a major influx of cash right now for these things going on. But these are seeds being planted that we are going to hear from and hear grow later on in all this. Nicole's going to give us a great idea of what this road looks like ahead now as the Supreme Court rules in favor of Alston in the case of Alston versus the NCAA, and now is removing this arbitrary limit to what schools and what the NCAA can allow a scholarship to cover for student athletes. We'll get to plenty more on that, but coming up, let's head back to the city of brotherly love here and just see how ready to bury the process the entire city of Philadelphia is. We'll get to that next after this word from Indeed. Now, the good news, guys, the good news is your business has doubled. The even better news is Indeed can help you hire the right people without the wait times of the typical recruiting process. That's because Indeed has a great hiring platform where you can make calls, schedule virtual interviews, and talk to candidates over video right from your easy-to-use employer dashboard. It's just another reason that Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all the other job sites combined, according to Talent Nest. Find your next great hire at Indeed.com/credit. Philadelphia, this is a wellness check coming up next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Philadelphia has had a bad day that seems to be snowballing into more. Doc Rivers, Joel Embiid, a lot of public criticism for their guard, Ben Simmons. Is it warranted? And is it all part of a plan? Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales sitting in for Janae Agumake today. And to figure out what's going on in Philadelphia, let's start some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And welcome in our guest, Mike Sielski of the Philadelphia Inquirer. And Mike, we've heard a lot from Doc Rivers and Joel Embiid after that loss last night about their point guard, Ben Simmons. Now, we just heard from Doc Rivers today, who said, quote, "I believe without going into detail with what we're doing, I believe we know what the right work is and the right type of work and the right way to do it." Rivers said when he was asked why this offseason will be different as far as Ben Simmons and his shooting goes. Mike, do we have any reason to believe Doc Rivers at this point on that front?
No, we don't. First of all, thanks for having me on, guys. And no, we don't have any reason to believe it because Ben Simmons got worse this past season under Doc Rivers than he had been his previous years in the league under Brett Brown. You know, his free throw percentage dropped, his points per game dropped, his shooting percentage overall dropped, his free throw percentage during the playoffs was worse than the average NBA player's 3-point percentage during the playoffs. I mean, you have to work hard to be that bad a shooter in the NBA, especially in this iteration of the NBA where shooting matters so much. Look, they're trying damage control here, guys. Everybody saw what happened last night. Everybody has seen what has happened over the series with the Hawks. You know, that's all this is. You know, the idea that they're going to fix Ben Simmons in the offseason is pie-in-the-sky stuff.
When it comes to the amount of blame placed, yes, there was about 75% blame placed on Ben, but I saw a little 25% across my Twitter timeline headed towards Doc Rivers' way. So what then is the organization looking at as far as offseason, not moves, but just changes they need to make and discussions they need to have surrounding both the coaching staff and the player and personnel?
Well, I mean, if you look at the way they ran their offense, such as it was in that series against the Hawks, I mean, you were down to Joel Embiid and Seth Curry and a wing and a prayer. I mean, in that game five loss where they had the 26-point lead and blew it in the second half, only Embiid and Curry scored for them in the second half. They had, as the roster was this year, they had too many guys who, if you put them in the game, you simply couldn't give them the ball on offense. And it's not just Simmons. If you took Embiid out, you were putting Dwight Howard in the game. Matisse Thybulle is a terrific defensive player. I'd argue maybe the best pound-for-pound perimeter defender in the league. Only plays 20 minutes a night because he can't shoot, can't score. So, you know, Danny Green goes down with an injury, with a groin injury, and you think, well, that's not that big a deal. But Danny Green provided just enough offense to balance out the floor and to kind of counterbalance the weaknesses around there. So Doc was really never able to kind of work around that. You know, he maintained the same kind of substitution patterns he had throughout the season. He didn't seem to coach for the moment. I think that's something that a lot of people in and around Philadelphia are taking a hard look at now. And they're taking a hard look at Daryl Morey and saying, okay, Daryl, proof's in the pudding. What are you going to do this offseason?
Jhené Engel, Jr. here on ESPN Radio, talking to Mike Sielski, Philadelphia Inquirer columnist, with us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike, is this the last we've seen of Ben Simmons in a 76ers uniform? Is there anything they can do with him this offseason that would have him in a different spot and getting something in return for him?
I don't see how, Mike. You know, I got asked about this by someone else earlier today. You know, can you use him as kind of a Draymond Green kind of player, a power forward who plays great defense and rebounds and is unselfish? That's all fine and good if you're paying, you know, Draymond Green $10 million a year, $12 million a year. Ben Simmons is a max contract player. And the idea that you're going to build around him to turn him into kind of a third or fourth cog in a championship level team with him making that amount of money seems, again, kind of wishful thinking to me. Never mind the fact that he's got to come. Is he going to come back and play in Philadelphia after what happened in these playoffs? That I don't see. I think he needs a fresh start. I think the Sixers need a fresh start. I don't know what the deal is that they could make to move him. And I'm not normally a guy who says, oh, you just got to trade this guy. But I think it would be beneficial to both parties if the Sixers were able to trade Ben Simmons.
There's nothing like a fresh start for Ben Simmons for the organization, but what you are certain of is Joel Embiid and his superstar capability. And he's shown that time and time again, specifically in this past series. But there were moments of lapse. There were moments of fatigue, and you look at even the injury. So when it comes to the health and sustainment of the force that is Joel Embiid, what can the Sixers do on that front?
They can get him some help. If there's a way to get a perimeter scorer to help him, particularly in the final couple minutes of a game, that would go a long way to fixing any kind of problems that are caused by Joel Embiid. Look, guys, Joel Embiid committed 8 turnovers in game 7. And that's a ton. That's way too many. But look how many times he's handling the ball on the perimeter. Look how many times he's the trail guy on a fast break, pulling up to shoot a 3. Those are the kind of things that, because the Sixers don't have a point guard who can organize an offense and create easy flow sort of jump shots and scoring opportunities for Embiid in the post or Tobias Harris on the perimeter, those are the sort of things that they have to do to kind of manufacture offense. And that's the problem with having Ben Simmons as your point guard, is that he is not testing a defense nearly enough, even on a good night, in a way that he has that a modern NBA point guard has to. Never mind the fact that, you know, in these last few games, you know, especially in the fourth quarter, he was looking to give the ball up and just stand underneath the basket, and no one would throw him the ball because everybody knew he didn't want to go to the foul line.
It's incredible. And I think there are a lot of great things that Ben Simmons is still capable of doing. But like you pointed out, what this team needs him to be able to do as not only a piece opposite Joel Embiid, but a very highly paid one, that's where this all gets increasingly more problematic. Mike, we appreciate the time. We know Philadelphia is going to be a very interesting place today. So thank you, and hopefully better days ahead here.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
That is Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Again, Mike Sielski. You can check him out, columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer here. And this is where it gets interesting, Trev, because there's a lot of money and years still tied up in Ben Simmons right now. And there's a lot of people saying he's 24. He is 4 years into this as a player. We know he had the injury-riddled, air quotes, rookie season that kept him off the court. But is there not more developing that this guy can do? This just reeks of something more, Trev, because you and I both talked about this to start the top of the show. Most organizations, most teammates, and most coaches will not publicly say as readily as Joel Embiid and Doc Rivers did last night, the things they did about Ben Simmons without a level of frustration that didn't just start this series. That's the thing that keeps ringing to me here. This reeks of something more.
Yeah, that Doc quote of him knowing what to do with Ben felt like a last-ditch effort to polish up the asset that is Ben Simmons before we ship him up out of there because he looks attractive at the very least.
Yeah, it felt like the last-ditch attempt by Doc Rivers to say, oh man, I said a little bit too much last night, right? Like, I let the cat out of the bag last night. We got to try and shove that thing
back in.
So, yeah, I'm going to say, whoopsies. So while Doc Rivers may have said a little bit too much and is trying to fix it as best he can right now, coming up next, there is another sport that is trying to go for a very swift fix with some foreign substances. We will tell you, as Major League Baseball gets set to start checking its pitchers and making sure they're not using any of this fun, sticky stuff, we will show you the one place that Major League Baseball still will not go. That's next here. Chanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Chanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
So, that was all great. And I appreciated everything that he brought to the table, but was anyone concerned that they were going to be strip searching these guys?
Not at all. There's no way that crossed anybody's mind. And my man just volunteered that information as if it was absolutely necessary. Why? Correct. For why? For why would we even offer that information?
And you know what? I understand. Like, who among us hasn't gone for the low-hanging fruit there? Now, I don't expect, like, a full cavity surge going on here at the mound for these guys for the presence of any of these banned sticky substances. But, Trev, it has been interesting to watch, and we've heard a lot of vocal Major League Baseball. We'll talk to a former MLB reliever about this coming up in the next hour because
I think it is interesting. It's exactly why we have this discussion surrounding what exactly is going on with these major league pitchers. It feels like a given an inch and taking a mile sort of directive here, right? Like we were cool with the idea of you using the occasional bit of sunscreen. The occasional bit of rosin obviously is provided for you at the mound. There were things that you could do that were within the realms of, cool, this is gamesmanship, and we'll let that ride. But there's also this level that it's been taken to with this spider tag. I don't know if you've seen, Mike, like there is the spider tag itself. It was exhibited on Baseball Tonight Live. Gary Streisky, June Lee kind of did a demonstration, had the lab coats on and everything. And it was absurd, the amount of viscosity and stickiness that they had on that little bit of spider tag. It holds everything up. It defies gravity. And so, yes, Major League Baseball is saying, all right, look, bro, we know that y'all were doing some shady stuff, and it's not even considered shady because, again, it's gamesmanship. But this spider tag stuff has gone to a level that we need to kind of rein y'all in, and it starts with these literal inning-by-inning searches on these pitchers.
Yeah, and I think Chanae Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. You could say big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat. Visit progressive.com. I think, Trev, I understand the sentiment around it completely, right? Like, we went through this in a much larger extent with the cheating scandal in Houston where it was things outside of the realm of the norm. It was things that felt so over the top. And what we've seen from those demonstrations that you talked about makes this feel even more over the top. But what I can understand from the pitching side of things here is there might be a physical drawback to this. We know the biomechanics of pitching are studied more now than ever. And so what goes into that and the things that you're going to have to change? Because the one thing that was overwhelmingly evident to me when everyone started, you know, Batman style or Spider-Man style sticking stuff to their fingers to show off how wild this was is, it's got to take so long to learn to pitch like that, right? To actually be able to get to release the ball to form the pitch that you want with all of that. And so the adjustment on the other side, Major League Baseball is going to benefit from this because I have a feeling offensive numbers are going to skyrocket, Trev. But the downside for pitchers, I'm sure, is, all right, we got our health on the line now when you could have just done this after the season and tried to keep this quiet.
Oh, Tyler Glasnow came out and said it, like said the quiet part out loud, saying that, look, this is dangering to my literal elbow joint and tendons attached to it. It is very clearly going to be a massive adjustment, which is why, to your point, I think it was a little bit sudden to make this change this drastically in the middle of the season. I do believe that it would have gone over much better if we had tried to tackle this in the off season. It was just to the point where those offensive numbers that you spoke to were so bad. It became so unwatchable to a point where Major League Baseball felt like they had to step in. I don't know what the gradient is in between what we're doing at this point and what Glasnow is asking you to do and wait until the next offseason. But there's got to be something in the middle ground there that protects both the health of the pitchers and protects just the idea of us being able to watch baseball games and enjoy them.
Yeah, this is always the difficult part, is the line between entertainment product and competitive balance that we talk about in every sport, right? Where we know these are things that are big and huge and loved because we've all watched them, because we've all put this kind of importance to them. But what point along the way do we kind of understand, all right, a league that had to be aware this was going on. Like, I don't think this snuck up on Major League Baseball in any real way, but it was the attention paid to it and the results given that says, all right, we know we've let this slide for a while. Now we've got to come to something amicable. I think you're absolutely right, Trev, in that Major League Baseball probably could have been a little more proactive in this conversation with the players involved and not just dictated what this is going to be. We'll have a lot more on this when we talk to a former big leaguer in the next hour. But let's talk about the big movers in the NBA postseason that we saw this weekend next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.